We had holy days. Here are some of the seasons of the church calendar right here. I've got a copy of it. This is one, particular one's for the Methodist Church. It has Advent, then Christmastide, then Epiphany, then Lent, then Eastertide, then Whitsuntide. I think that's a fancy name for Pentecost and the Sundays following, until the beginning of Kingdomtide, which is next. Kingdomtide comes, and then they have Labor Day Sunday, Worldwide Communion Sunday, World Order Sunday, World Temperance Sunday, Reformation Sunday, All Saints Sunday. They do have Pentecost. So, yeah, how many of these are found in the Bible? I mean, think of it. Advent, Christmastide, Epiphany, Lent, Eastertide. I'm not here to put them down. I just prefer holy days that are actually mentioned in the Bible that are in here. Let's go to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14. A lot of what I'm going to give you is definite and factual, although I'm going to have one little spot of personal opinion in just a little bit. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14. And I went many years attending the feast before I knew this right here. It says, "Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night." Now, there are lights in the heavens. They're wonderful. We have the sun, the moon, the stars and planets. And I remember living in the Philippines as a boy. I went to the third grade in the Philippines. It was right after the war, and I collected machine gun bullets and Japanese rifle, which I happen to still own, and some other things over there. But we could walk out because there weren't a lot of lights, and you could walk out at night behind our house at Fort McKinley. It was just so clear. I believe we went there in 48. And you could see so many stars and how wonderful they were. It was amazing. So much. I mean, I've never seen anything since then. You can go out to the western deserts and see it that clearly, I guess, today. But I've never seen it that clear before or since. And it was just amazing. And yet, now we know that when they say the heavens declare the glory of God, that they did not understand the 1 billionth. Each one of those little stars we have discovered since the time of David and the writing of the Psalms, each one is a giant sun, although some out there that you can see just a few galaxies. You wouldn't know they're galaxies, look like faint little stars. And billions of stars in each galaxy, billions of galaxies. It's just amazing. It says, let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. Now, I wondered, what does it mean by signs? So I looked up that Hebrew word, and wherever it's used, it's basically used not as a looking for your sign. It's used for God's miracles. When God glorified himself, for instance, in Egypt, he said it was a sign to the Egyptians. Sometimes they even translated this particular word as miracle, something that glorifies God. It was a sign of God's glory. It's Asa is the name of it. I've got a different one that I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, then it says in seasons, and the word there, many of you may know, is moed, M-O-E-D, moad or moed. And I brought with me the new brown Driver, Briggs, Gesenius, Hebrew, Aramaic, English lexicon. How you like that? Huh? That's pretty good, huh? A guy named Gesenius, who was a German, seems like it was something like Wilhelm, Gesenius, just went to every Hebrew word that could be found, not just in the Bible, but anywhere, and went through all the Aramaic sayings that they had dug up, which is a similar language, and every place it was used, and he put it into this book. And so this book is used by basically every person who has written a Hebrew lexicon since. The reason it says Brown Driver Briggs is because it was translated later into English, and Brown was an editor along with Driver and Briggs who filled it out a little more. But it originally was written in German. Now, I go to the part that's about Moed, M-O-E-D. And here's an interesting statement about it, where it says, let it be for seasons. Well, what do you mean for seasons? Notes, talking about it. It is most probable that in Genesis 1:14, where Moed is used, the reference is to the sacred seasons as fixed by the moon's appearance. Now, I didn't finish reading the sentence because I want to go back and read the rest of it a little later. But listen to this. Here in Genesis 14, where God set the sun and the moon and the stars where he wanted them to be, even according to this book right here, it was probably talking seasons, Moed, about the holy days. The holy days. He says, to the sacred seasons. You know what that means? That when God, even before God made man, he set the moon for the regulating of when the holy days would be. Now we know he made the Sabbath the day after he made humans. But he put the moon there for seasons, Moed, meaning the sacred seasons according to this book. Let me read another one. I didn't bring it. The Jerome Biblical Commentary. This is a Catholic commentary. I just brought a quotation from it. Of the functions of the sun, moon, and stars. And he's talking about here in Genesis chapter 1, verse 14, the commentary. The second, which is seasons, signs first, season second. The second emphasizes their cultic purpose. It sounds bad, doesn't it? Cult has taken on a bad name in this day and age. But the original meaning of cult meant just a religious service that taught. It's from the same word that you get culture, cultivate. It meant to grow. Webster's New World Dictionary says of cult, it means to care for, cultivate, culture, a system of religious worship or ritual. So now we think of some group that has somebody who's leading it for power and money as being a cult, and they won't let you out. But notice even the Catholic encyclopedia says that right here in Genesis 1 and verse 14, that where it says seasons, it's talking about its cultic or its religious ritual and purpose. So even then, the moon was created and set in position for religious seasons. The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia says this on the word season. A divinely appointed festival was called Moed. Now they spell it M-O-A-D, but it's, you're taking a Hebrew. Remember, there were no vowels in Hebrew, so it's hard to know. It's just M-D is all they had. Let's turn to Ezekiel 36 and verse 38. Ezekiel 36 and verse 38. Now here's another place where Moab is used. Now, Moab is used occasionally to mean a meeting that is other than a religious day. But it is usually used for speaking of religious meetings. God would not have had, didn't have the moon guide any other meetings than the holy days. I mean, he didn't say, well, here's a non-religious day that we have them guided by the moon. So they were all for religious purposes. Here in Ezekiel 36 and verse 38, it says, and it's talking about the restoration of Israel. Like a flock offered as holy sacrifices, like the flock at Jerusalem, on its Moed. Now here is the word Moed, definitely applying to feast days, so much so, the translators didn't even translate it as seasons. They translated it as feast days. And if we go back to Leviticus 23, where all the holy days are mentioned, it's calling these days Moed. Leviticus 23, verse 2. Leviticus 23, verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feast, that's Moed, of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. A holy convocation is a holy commanded assembly. Convocation is a meeting, if you go look it up, that is convoked. And if you look up convoked, it meant commanded. So it's a commanded assembly. And they are called the Moed of the Lord. Same, God put the moon, even before man was created, where it is, set it in going in the right order, although it was probably created before then. Long time before then. But he put them in the skies to guide and direct when the holy days would be kept. So the holy days were not something added at the time of Moses. The Moed of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my Moed. Then down in verse 4. These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations. Feast is Moed. Of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their, it says appointed times, but it's the same word, Moed. Proclaim it at the Moed. God made the moon before he made Adam and Eve for the feast days. And then if you drop down to verse 37, again, he repeats it. These are the Moed of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. And finally, in verse 44, same thing. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the Moed, the seasons, but the holy seasons. And that's what it was for, the holy seasons. Now, that brings up something that I just noticed this time. Didn't pay much attention to it. But it says this, finishing that sentence. Well, I'll start off at the beginning. It is most probable that in Genesis 1:14, where Moed is, the reference is to the sacred seasons as fixed by the moon's appearance. And see also, and then it gives the Hebrew words, And he made the moon for sacred seasons, Psalm 104, verse 19. Now, I hadn't noticed that. He made the moon for sacred seasons. I'd never noticed that in the Bible. He made the moon. The moon was made for sacred seasons. And so I went to look it up. And it is Psalm 104, verse 19. So here this very authoritative book by a man who probably himself, I'm sure, did not keep Sabbath and holy days. If he had, I think that we would have heard of it. Why had I never seen that verse? Because it's not translated, made, in this book that I'm holding, New King James Version. It has been translated here in verse 19, he appointed the moon for seasons. Appointed the moon for seasons. That's the word that I mentioned, asah. Asah. So I thought, well, now, appointed it doesn't mean he made it for seasons. There it was, he appointed it. So I went to look up the Hebrew word. You know, this is a word that is very commonly used in the Old Testament. And this is that I could find the only place it was ever translated as appointed. The only place that I could find it. It's actually in the Old Testament 2,633 times. Now, I didn't stop and count them myself, but I have a computer program that counted it up. Now, it is, whether in present tense, it is translated mostly, this is just the translation, as do, or past tense, did. It is translated, and that's over 1,333 times. 653 times it's translated as make, to actually make, to do or make. God did the moon, or he made the moon, for these holy seasons. And I looked up other translations to see. Well, I looked in the Jewish version. And the Jewish version has in there that he made the moon for seasons, for Moad. He made the moon. Now, my belief is that when God made the earth, he made the moon at the same time. And scientists tell us, astronomers say the moon was made at the same time as the earth, but they don't know how it was made. They do not know how it was made to be in the orbit that it's in. And they have speculated on it. I got a bunch of speculations from Wikipedia, the authoritative free source. But I found other translations besides the Jewish one. New American Standard. He made the moon for the seasons. New Jerusalem. He made the moon to mark the seasons. New Revised Standard. You have made the moon to mark the seasons. Now, I'll grant you that doesn't automatically mean that he designed it when he first created it for that purpose, but I believe he did. Because God knew that his plan when he made the earth. I mean, he does say that Jesus was slain from the foundation of the earth. Mentions that in Revelation 13, verse 8. So he knew his plan. I mean, if Jesus was slated to die from the foundation of the earth, then God knew he was going to have a plan that included the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, that he understood that when he created the earth. And so they have gone in. By the way, how the moon was made, in Wikipedia, it says several mechanisms have been suggested for the moon's formation. The formation of the moon is hypothesized to have occurred 4.527 plus or minus 0.01 billion years ago. Okay, a little. How are they getting that exact? I don't know. We used to hear that the Earth was 4 billion years. Now they're saying 4.5. And now it's 4.527. But it could be, according to this, as early as 4.517 or 4.537 billion years. But the moon is the same age. The same age. There is the fission hypothesis. Early speculation proposed that the moon broke off from the Earth's crust because of centrifugal forces, leaving a basin, presumed to be the Pacific Ocean, behind as a scar. This idea, however, would require too great an initial spin of the Earth to throw the thing off up there, and would have resulted in the moon's orbit following Earth's equatorial plane rather than its current path, which is not exactly on the equatorial plane. Then there was the capture hypothesis. Other speculation is centered on the moon being formed elsewhere and subsequently traveling through the universe, being captured by Earth's gravity. However, the conditions conjectured necessary for such a mechanism to work, such as an extended atmosphere of the Earth, is you have to have air going way up to slow the moon down. To dissipate the energy of the passing moon are improbable. Then there's the co-formation hypothesis. The co-formation hypothesis proposes that the Earth and the moon formed together at the same time and place from the primordial accretion disk. Yeah, I went and looked that up. And don't worry about it. It just, you know, means this big thing around and it's circling around that all congeals. That's the best I could get out of it. The moon would have formed from material surrounding the proto-Earth. I know what proto means, the early Earth. Similar, or the forming Earth. Similar to the formation of the planets around the sun. Some suggest that this hypothesis fails to adequately explain the depletion of metallic iron in the moon. So there needs to be more iron there if that's the case. Then there is the giant impact hypothesis. The prevailing hypothesis today is that the Earth-Moon system formed as a result of a giant impact. And so they speculate a Mars-sized body, which they have given a name to, Theia, is hypothesized to have hit the proto-Earth, blasting sufficient material into orbit around the proto-Earth to form the moon through accretion. If that's how you... I didn't look how to pronounce it. The accretion is the process by which all planetary bodies are theorized to have formed. Giant impacts are thought to have affected most, if not all, planets. Anyway, it says that there's a problem with it being that way. Unresolved questions regarding this theory concern the determination of the relative sizes of the proto-Earth and Theia and how such material from these two bodies formed the moon. And it says recent oxygen isotope... the only point I'm making is they don't know how the moon was formed. They're saying recent oxygen isotope composition analysis of the moon shows its oxygen isotope composition is more similar to the Earth than this hypothesis would suggest. So there's a problem with that hypothesis. The answer to me is God just made them. And He put them where He wanted. And He may have used some natural forces. He may not have. He may not have used them. He just does what He wants to do. And that's fine with Him. I thought it interesting, though, that all of these, taking this word, the actual word, that there are so many translations that say He made the moon for Moab. He made the moon for the festival seasons. And If the earth is 4.5 billion years old, and the moon is 4.5 billion years old, give or take a little more, God designed and planned the holy days, not at Moses, but longer than 4.5 billion years ago. He had the holy days planned out. That's a long time. That is older than Bill Vernich. Yes. Matthew 26, verse 17 and 19. Matthew 26. Now, on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, or actually, day of and feast are not there, and you can go to any commentary, they'll say the first day that they ate unleavened bread was Passover. You could have leavened bread on Passover, but I'm talking about on that day. You didn't have to have it out. But the Jews always got it out before Passover, just like most of you do. And the Passover itself was unleavened bread. So that, even though it was not called the Feast of Unleavened Bread, except colloquially, as we still do, it was the beginning of unleavened bread. The disciples came to Jesus saying to him, "Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?" And this is the day before he was killed, and then the first day of unleavened bread was, they hurried to put him into the tomb, because that was a high day that was coming. It was not a holy day, the Passover, because he even said to Judas, "What you do, do quickly," after Satan entered into him. Now that's in the book of John. And so he was headed out. And the disciples, most of them, thought that he had some instructions to go purchase something for the feast that was coming. Now, if it were a holy day, they would not have thought he was going to buy stuff on that day. So the Passover is not a holy day. Here, when, of course, he was not going to buy anything. He was going to betray Jesus. But the disciples, many of them thought, well, he must be going to buy something because he kept the money. So it wasn't a holy day. "Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?" And he said, "Go into the city to a certain man and say to him, 'The teacher says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.' So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover." Jesus was someone who kept the Passover. The disciples were people who kept the Passover. They expected him to keep the Passover. They said, "Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?" In John 2 and verse 23, John 2. And verse 23. "Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs which he did. I'm just reading this to show that he was someone who kept the Passover. When it was Passover time, Jesus was there. "When he was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed in his name." They began, like we do, to call Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread interchangeably. You know, I say to people, "Well, I'm going to be in Nigeria for the Passover." Or I say, "I'm going to be in Nigeria for Days of Unleavened Bread." Everybody assumes I'm going to be there for both of them. And if we say, "Well, I'm going to so-and-so for the Feast of Tabernacles," everybody automatically, you know, I don't have to say, "Well, I'll be there for the last day also, the eighth day." We just lump them together. And they did. They lumped them together just as we do. But there he was for the Passover. In John 15 and verse 10, John 15. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. And here's the point. Just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Jesus was an obedient individual. He obeyed his Father. He kept the Passover, the days of unleavened bread. It mentions him keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. You know, it's amazing. Most people who go attend church, even Bible-believing churches, I would say most of the people who attend have never even heard of the Feast of Tabernacles. I mean, or at least they don't remember it. They may have read it, but it just went in the eyes, out the back of the head. I have that same problem now. Things go, anything I put in my brain up on the shelf here, two things fall off the back. But they just, you know, I can mention the Feast of Tabernacles to people who are very religious. And they'll ask, well, what is that? And I'll say, it's in the Bible. Jesus kept the Feast of Tabernacles, and it mentions it in John 7. They'll say, really? They have no idea. They have no idea that that's true. In Acts chapter 2 and verse 1, and you're familiar with this. There's so many verses that tell us that we are to keep the same laws that Jesus did, that we're to walk as he walked. Maybe I should turn to one of those in a moment. Acts 2 and verse 1, you're aware of this? Now, when the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. It is a fact that they kept the day of Pentecost. They were with one accord in one place. We will be with one accord in one place. We have no idea where that one place will be. You haven't solidified anything yet, have you? Okay, well, I'll bet you make that earlier next year. Well, we're trying to find a place to keep Pentecost. And we'll see. But it says, had fully come. And the word here is sumpleru. Remember when the ship filled with water? And back in Luke 8, verse 23. And when it filled, when a ship is filled up, it is sumpleru. So it is really the day of Pentecost had fully come or was fully being kept, some have said. They were all with one accord in one place, as we should be. And then in Acts 18, verse 18 through 21. I'm watching my watch. That's what a watch is for. Acts 18, verse 18 through 21. So Paul still remained a good while. Then he took leave of the brethren and sailed for Syria. And Priscilla and Aquila were with him. He had his hair cut off at Centuria, which is actually the port city outside of Corinth. It's not far from Corinth. For he had taken a vow. He came to Ephesus and left them there, but he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to stay a longer time with them, he did not consent, but took leave of them, saying, I must by all means keep this coming feast in Jerusalem. Now notice, keep. It not just happened to be there. He says, I must keep this coming feast in Jerusalem. He didn't always keep the feast in Jerusalem, but this one he wanted to. But I will return again to you, God willing. Good thing to say, God willing. And he sailed from Ephesus. What feast was this? Dr. Hay thought it was Tabernacles. Now, sailing in the winter in the Mediterranean is very dangerous, just like this cruise ship that got hit by that big wave. So there wasn't a lot of sailing after after the Feast of Atonement, or Day of Atonement, because the sea got so rough. However, if he went earlier, he could keep tabernacles there, but he'd want to be there before the Day of Atonement, because, as I say, the sea gets rough in the Mediterranean. And if you think it hit a cruise ship, the Goliaths killed two people, sad. Just imagine in a little wooden boat. It says, but I will return again to you. He thought it was tabernacles, and the old correspondence course thought it was tabernacles in A.D. 52. However, Erdman's Bible commentary suggests Passover in 52 A.D. They think it's Passover, so it's hard to know. It doesn't really clarify it. Acts 20 and verse 6. This is a Greek writing. Luke wrote the book of Acts. He was sometimes he'd talk about Paul doing something. Occasionally he would talk about Paul doing something, and he used the pronoun we, the plural pronoun we. That means Luke was with him. He is writing this book to a Greek, but he's marking time with the days of unleavened bread. Philippi is in Macedonia. It's not a great Jewish area. We sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days joined them at Troas, where we stayed 7 days. He's marking time in a Greek, marking time with God's holy days, which they both understood because they were keeping them. In verse 16, for Paul had decided to sail past Ephesus so that he would not have to spend time in Asia, for he was hurrying to be at Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost. So he was, once again, keeping the feast. And finally, Acts 27, verse 9, at least in the book of Acts. Acts 27 and verse 9. And here is showing where, and many margins will say it's the Day of Atonement, or they will say it's the 10th day of the 7th month, that is in God's calendar, which is Day of Atonement. I've had Bibles that said that. This particular Bible doesn't say that. Although they have capitalized the F on the word fast, because they knew it was talking about the Day of Atonement. Now, when much time had been spent and sailing was now dangerous, you're getting into the winter, or at least late fall, was now dangerous because the fast, that's atonement, was already over. So there, once again, this Greek is writing to a Greek. They're marking time with God's days. And he knew that the man he was writing to would know what this was, even though he's Greek. All right, it's 1 John that I was referring to. It's not in my notes, but 1 John chapter 2, and we'll read verse 3 to 6, and then I will sit down or stand up for a song. Now, by this we know that we know him. 1 John 2, verse 3. If we keep his commandments, he who says, I know him, and does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. By this we know that we are in him. And verse 6 is the one I wanted to get to. Jesus Christ kept the holy days. The disciples kept the holy days. It says, verse 6, he who says he abides in him, that is in Jesus, ought himself also to walk just as he walked. Well, it's rare that I find something new to put into a pre-holy day message, but just happened to read that in the Brown, Driver, Briggs, Gesenius, Hebrew, Aramaic, English lexicon about He made the moon for the holy seasons.